Kwa tauri aia nei ki te ao o te taonga puoro. Ariana T. Kao is a composer and singer of Ngaitahu descent. She began performing in 1993 with the folk group Ponamu and branched out on a solo music career in the early 2000s. She is a passionate exponent of Taonga Puoro, following in the footsteps of legends like Hereni Melbourne and her mentors Richard Nuns and Brian Flintoff. Yesterday afternoon, in fact, she was announced as one of seven 2020 Arts Foundation laureates, and she is live in studio with me now. Ariana, tēnā koe, hoa?
Tēnā koe.
Nō hea koe?
Nō te rohe o Horomaka hau, ko Kātiere Kehu te hapu, ko Kaitahu te iwi. Ai, he mihi araha, kia tēnā koe, kia koutou katoa e whakaroko ana.
Ko Wainga Marae?
Ko Onaku Rawa ko Rapake ngā marae matua.
Ka pai. Tēnā koe, hoa. Thank you so much for coming in. To the studio and also for performing live for us. Where did you learn Taonga Puoro?
I started learning to play as soon as I met Brian Flintoff at his studio just near Nelson. He asked me if I could play and I said no at that time, and he showed me how to get a sound and then, yeah, I was away at that point. I just was struck by the beauty and yeah, ever since I've just been deepening my knowledge and expanding my whānau of beautiful taonga. But before that, I'd been working with Richard Nuns. He was playing for me for my own music and recordings and some live performances as well. So yeah, I've been very fortunate to be around such people like that.
Did you have a natural passion for this? Where does that come from?
Good question. I think just when I heard about Taonga Puoro for the first time back as a student at Otago University in the early 90s, I was kind of a bit mystified, and I had no idea that they existed at that point, and I was quite curious about them. And later on, I went to study museum studies at Massey, and I worked with a collection of the Taonga Puoro at the Whanganui Museum on a practicum there, and also kind of looked into the revival of Taonga Puoro at that point. So this was in 1996. And that year I recorded an album with the group Ponamu, and we brought in Ngārangi Marsh to play some Taonga Puoro on that. And then, yeah, gradually it's just been something that I've kind of been fascinated about. But then, yeah, as soon as I started working with Richard, and then being fortunate to meet Brian and start, yeah, playing myself, like that, yeah, really was where I was launched into this part of my career, I suppose, and passion.
If memory serves me correct, there weren't many wahine involved in Taonga Puoro. I think there was the late Rangiria Headley was a key part of working with Hereni and others. But I struggle to remember others. Were there other wahine Māori involved as well at the same time as you?
Definitely. At that time, we had Hine Wirangi Kohu Morgan, who was mentioned this morning. And I've only just recently met her in person last year. And she is really keen to support and tautoko wahine Māori players. And so she started mentoring me and some others, just to try and pass on the knowledge that she has particular to wahine in this space. But also Aroha Yates-Smith, who performs with Hereni and Richard. And there are a lot of other people, but I think the public face became the tāne and the movement. So they've definitely been there, but just not as visible.
Yeah. Your music, your compositions are all underpinned by identity, culture, reo, your Ngaitahu identity. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I started writing when I was at university at Otago. Started writing some waiata, and one of the early ones was a waiata called Ikara o Moa, and it was thinking about what if colonisation hadn't happened and what would my life have been like. And yeah, I was kind of exploring that sense of dislocation, I suppose, from growing up in suburban Christchurch as a half-caste at that time. And you're not so much connection with the culture, with a Pākehā mother and my dad who grew up at Rāpaki. So we always went back to our marae, but it was just fairly sporadic in terms of the experiences. And so, yeah, as a young wahine at that time, exploring my sense of turaka, like that, the music became part of that.
I find that interesting because your papa, George is your papa. Mm. He was very involved in Ngāi Tahu. I won't say politics. Yes, yeah. Ngāi Tahu revitalisation, as you say, being a part of the marae. And the tikau name is synonymous with Ngāi Tahu through exploits of your tupuna.
Yeah, so I became also involved with Onoku Marae when my dad went back there to help lead the building of the Wharetipuna, Karaweko. And so, yeah, I suppose just as a child, like when dad was working and mum was working as well, like it wasn't so much a part of our everyday life. But then as a young adult, it became more and more so and made those really strong connections with the whānau.
You obviously undertake a lot of research. Where do you go to inform, as you say, the way in which you compose songs, the kaupapa that you discuss in those songs? Where do you go to help, I guess, inform also the work that you do with your own identity and the way in which you write those songs?
I definitely use the published books like Te Kau Talks a lot. The kōrero in there, they're real taonga for us. And we're so fortunate that people like Harris Beattie went and talked to our Pauati One Tāre Te Kau. So a lot of that kōrero is my puna, mātauranga, I suppose. And also the archival sources. So I actually work at the Alexander Turnbull Library with the taonga Māori there. So it's really interesting to be able to, you know, be so close to those sources as well and help other people connect with those taonga.
Can you talk to me about how Harris Beattie, who, as you say, is an acknowledged scholar in his own right in terms of the work that he did, but how that came about, that he was able to formulate that book, I guess, in Te Kau Talks and talk to your tupuna. How did that happen?
I'm pretty sure he was involved with, might have been the Otago Museum at the time, or there's some a museum that he was involved with, and so that research was part of that. And yeah, he spent a long time going around Kaumātua, speaking with Kaumātua all around the takiwā of Kaitahu. And yeah, as we were talking about earlier, like he used to bike around, and some of the kaika are quite hard to get to, so you can just imagine what that would have been like.
Pākehā man on a bike turns up at a kaika.
Probably no gears back then. But it's just really interesting to read even his remarks about our poa, just those insights that we're able to glean from the writing. And I read in one of the introductions of the books, he asked our poa why he passed this knowledge on to this Pākehā scholar. And he said at that time that not one of his children cared a jot about it. And so it was quite sad to hear that, or to read that at that time. But that was just the reality of what they were facing in terms of, you know, their priorities were survival and not so much the, you know, the culture being passed on. But yeah, I think our poa must have known that, you know, that there would be value in that in the future.
There's also been your quest for your own reel and your composition and work with te reo and ensuring that that's part of the work, the compositions that you write. Talk to me about your language journey. How have you been able to continue to follow that path, particularly through the music that you write?
When I first started writing waiata, I'd really only just started learning te reo at university at that time, and but I really felt strongly about that was part of who I am, and also the Te Mita or Kaitahu, the Kaitahu dialect that I really wanted to use that as much as possible to promote our differences within Te Ao Māori and uniqueness. And so, yeah, most of my compositions are using as much as I can know about our Kaitahu dialect. But yeah, reo has been a struggle, I suppose, over the years. I did my degree in Māori, and then I went to some total immersion hui, which really helped me to have the confidence to speak. But yeah, it's just an ongoing journey, I suppose, and sometimes still a struggle, but I just try and use it when I can and promote it as much as possible.
By ongoing journey, how do you make that real? What do you do to continually stay on that path, I guess, of speaking and learning the language?
Yeah, just recently, speaking with Al and other Taonga Pōro players here in Wellington, we decided to set up a little ropu kōrero, e pāna ki ēnei taonga.
Ah, ka pai.
So just a fairly informal group because we're all mates, and it was a good way for us to be able to use te reo Māori and to talk about the Taonga Pōro as well. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's the best of all worlds, really, and just gives us an ability to stretch ourselves and to learn more vocabulary and things like that.
We should say Al's with us in the studio, sitting there immediately waiting for his chance to have a chat and to play a couple of Taonga Pōro. You brought some Taonga in with you. Every time I see one of Brian's Taonga, I kind of, it's not a gasp, but I just kind of, it stops me, you know, and it's hard to kind of describe, but he's an absolute tohunga. Are you able to just talk through the Taonga that you've brought in and give us a description of each one, and then potentially, you know, give us an example of the playing the instrument itself?
This one is a putatara that Brian made me. It was actually tohu mai mahara mo tōku papa after my papa passed away. It's called Te Waka Huru Huru Manu. And the shell is a shell that Brian had for many years from Papua New Guinea. And it's got some beautiful toroa feathers on it. Putatara can be played in a few different ways. One's kind of a trumpet voice, and also a kōwō type voice, which is called hine moke moke. Shall I play a little bit?
Ka pai, ka rawhiwa.
And the trumpet voice, which is a bit louder, so step back a little
bit. We'll get Rachel just to man the volume here. Beautiful. What's the trick here? You know, I won't divulge all the information, but I have an affinity with someone who may or may not have revitalised and rejuvenated the art of Taonga Pōro, but unfortunately have no natural talent or disposition for it, it would appear. What's the trick here in terms of playing Taonga Pōro? What are the fundamentals?
I think one of the main things is that each of the taonga are unique, and so you need to spend time with each one getting to know them. I see them as kind of like developing a friendship. Once you know the basic techniques of a lot of the flute type instruments are side blown, and so once you learn that technique, it's really about just bonding with the taonga itself, and also some of them are just found instruments, so you can go to the beach or the river and get some river stones and use those as tumutumu or the percussive sounds. And rākau, you can use those as pākuru and another percussive instrument. So, yeah, there's a real range, which I don't think people realise as well, just how wide a range there are.
Can you become adept at playing Taonga Pōro without having a full appreciation of the whakapapa and the tikanga behind, and the kōrero behind Taonga Pōro, in your view?
I think you can, at a basic level, you could learn some techniques and play, but I think the real value is behind the depth of the kōrero, behind all of our atua associated with them and the pūrākau attached to this body of instruments, and also knowing the cultural context as well for each one. There's just so much to learn, and I'm really enjoying myself, like just learning more and more.
Oh, fine. Okay, haere tonu, he taonga anō.
Okay, he pahupounamu tēnei. This is my pahupounamu, and this was made for me by Russell Beck in Invercargill, he was a specialist in pounamu, and he made this one when he was exploring the sound qualities of pounamu, and this one is called Te Iriraki or Waitaiki.
I'm trying to recollect whether I've heard a pahupounamu before. I don't think I have. I think this is the first time I've ever experienced someone playing it live, which is amazing. It's a beautiful sound, eh?
Yeah, so I had a cloth over the striker to soften it a little bit, and but they do have real chime-like qualities, and real beauty, I think.
I should say we have images of the taonga pōro that Ariana and Al will be playing and are playing now on the website. So if you have a look at those, as I say, they are there for you to observe and review and have a look at as well. Haere tonu aho.
Okay, this is a little kōwaiwai pungaihu, which is a nose-blowing gourd. And this is what she sounds like.
You said she.
I see these instruments, the gourds, as very feminine, and hine pū te hue is the atua associated with these taonga, and in Brian Flintoff's book he talks about her pūrākau as being a bringer of peace after the separation of Rangi and Papa, when the guys were kind of fighting each other, and she brought all of that raruraru into herself, into her body, and transformed it into peace. So I think that's why, her sounds are so beautiful and mellow and peaceful.
Hawaii. Haere tonu.
Okay, this is a little ipu kōrero, also known as poipū or poifū. And these were are used to keep rhythm. So, these are kind of like pew pew, and you can just see the little strands of harakeke that are dried and curled up, and with the moka thread. But these often used to accompany chant.
Oh, bye. I think we might have time for one more before we get you to play a song for us live.
Cool. Pūtori no tēnei. And Al's going to play another beautiful pūtori no later, but this is just an example.
Beautiful. Pūtori no hine raukatauri, ne?
Aye.
You better translate that for the audience.
Oh, so hine raukatauri is the atua of our beautiful flutes, and she is embodied in the shape of the pūtori no as well.
Kawai, what's the reaction that people have when they hear this for the first time in many of the performances that you and Al and others undertake?
I think it's a real connection. They may not know why, but I think it's a real human connection, and it reminds people that we're part of our whenua and environment, because a lot of the voices are associated with our environment, and you know they're all made from natural materials as well that that come from here. And so, yeah, ngā reo o te whenua nei.
Now, Ewan and Al are about to perform a very special waiata for us. Tell us about that waiata.
So this is the waiata we're going to perform is called Amokura. And it was, I discovered the lyrics and the kōrero of it in Brian Flintoff's book, Ngā Taonga Pōro, Singing Treasures. And he talked about that Herini Melbourne had composed the waiata for his granddaughter Amokura, and but nobody had heard what his rangi was for it. But in the lyrics it talks about all of these things that he holds precious, and that Amokura is that for him. And then it talks about all of these different taonga as well, different types of taonga pōro, and that she is likened to them as well for him.
And
so, when I read that story, I immediately felt very moved by it, and wrote a rangi and sent it to Brian, and Brian sent it onto the whānau. And he mihi ki a koe ki tō honanga ki tēnei whānau o ki a Papahirini.
Nā koe. E te iwi, koe nei te waiata a Amokura. We're live with Ariana Tikau. She's joined as well by Al Fraser, and they're performing the waiata Amokura. That was Ariana Tikal, 2020 Arts Laureate Ariana Tikal, accompanied by Al Fraser and the beautiful Waiata Amokura. Ariana, tēnā koe, tēnā kōrua koe. Thank you both very much for coming into the studio, performing that song, and also the kōrero. We really, really appreciate it. Ngā mihi nui.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Ka vaina.